Well, if you noticed, according to your little inserts or worship guides, whatever we would call them tonight, I'm turning this on, guys, because I'm blind up here, okay? I am to do a sermonette, and I love the ladies that are in charge of this, okay? Because they instruct me that I am to do a sermonette, not a full sermon. So each time they put that in that worship guide or our little bulletin this time, I realize that I need to keep it short. So I have now cut my pages in half, okay? I am not using my full pages tonight. I am using half pages. I just won't tell you how many there actually are. At this time of the year, my series of messages for Advent for our folks has been, there is not a series. Usually I do have one, but this particular year I was looking for passages to kind of tie stuff together, and I just kept coming back to the story in Luke of the angel Gabriel and the announcement of the angel to the Virgin Mary. And that got me to thinking, as I found some amazing things, my eyes were open to amazing truths within that, that so often I have over the years just simply run over as part of the Christmas story, and thinking that the greater narrative is that Jesus is born, and yet God never wastes the word. He never wastes anything in the scriptures. And as I began to think about that, I thought about the entire story of the Christmas story of the birth of Jesus Christ. And it truly is one of the strangest stories ever, if you think about it. We are so used to it. We just think that that's our tradition. That is part of what we have been brought up with. This is truth. We know that. And so it doesn't seem strange to us. But if you take it away and you're from a different culture, even a different planet, and you came to this particular story and you heard this story, it is an amazingly strange story. And so I started to look at that with new eyes this particular season, and I found amazing things within it. But the overarching thing that I found out as I looked at the Christmas story and how God has revealed this Christmas story to us, I found that there are some amazingly important things for you and I to view our lives today. In the year 2018, the perplexing things, the oddities, the grievous things, the anxious things, the tragedies of our lives. It amazes me that when we look at the Christmas story from that perspective, it says so much about those things in our own lives, because they're all found within that Christmas story. And as I thought about a couple of them, several things have come to mind. The first thing that's really odd and strange about the story is the unexpected Messiah. Now, you and I think that we would have, the Old Testament, we would have seen this story unfold in the Old Testament before it actually would have occurred. We would have said, hey, God's coming, form of a baby, born to a virgin, this is going to happen somewhere in the future, and it can't be too far away, and one of our own ladies in our community is going to have the Messiah, and we're going to see this occur. You think that we would know that. But it's interesting that as I look through the Old Testament very quickly in preparation for this and preparation for my series of messages, it's interesting that the Son of God is never really mentioned in the Old Testament per se. You don't see within the Trinity, within the Godhead itself, the Son. You just don't see it. And the only place you see allusions to it, and if you would be smart enough within the understanding and studying of the Old Testament, you might have been able to pick up on that. But it isn't very clear. God the Father would be part of creation, it was told. The Spirit is mentioned all through the entire Old Testament. But you don't see the Son of God actually mentioned until the birth of this child. You see, and you would be able to tell that there was this Messiah coming. You would understand, if I looked up 1 Chronicles 17:13, I will be to him a father, and he shall be to me a son, and I will take my steadfast love from him. But that would have been understood a little bit differently, that yes, there's somebody going to be sitting on a throne, there's somebody going to be in charge, and that father-son relationship would be something amazingly close. But to literally say the Son of God is coming, you might not have picked it up. You could go to Psalms, you could go to Isaiah 53, but you wouldn't recognize this little baby that's coming. You wouldn't recognize the very Son of God coming. You know the Messiah is coming, but to recognize him as the Son of God, you wouldn't have seen it. If you would have perceived the messianic prophecy, such as what Isaiah chapter 7 and verse 14 was said, "Behold, the virgin shall conceive and bear a son and shall call his name Emmanuel." Now, you would think there we would see it, right? But they wouldn't have understood that over in its entirety. A virgin at that particular time could have been understood as simply a very chaste bride, a very pure bride in her demeanor. And so it would have been understood that during the normal way, the standard manner of having a baby, of being a pregnant and having a baby, would probably occur. And one of their own ladies, married to her husband, chaste woman, would be given birth to the Messiah. But literally, to look at the word Emmanuel, to say God with us, how would they have interpreted that? God was with them in the form of the Shekinah glory. God was with them at different times, came and went. You would know when he was there in the temple, and you know when his presence was in the temple. His part to say God is with us, there would have been an impression that, well, God is always with us. And so there must be something special coming, but God's presence would be with us whenever the Messiah comes, probably just a little closer. But to really understand, God is with us. God is here. I can see him. He is born, virgin birth in this little tiny manger. It was unseen. It was unexpected at the time. And then I looked at this from the wrong side of town. Would you have sent this baby into Bethlehem to be born and to known to become from Nazareth, or the Nazareth area, the Galilee area? Scriptures tell us in John chapter 7:52 and John 1:46, nothing good comes out of Nazareth. And there's never been a prophet out of Galilee. There's nothing good comes out of this particular area. Would we send, if we were God, would we send our son to be born in a particular area that's really known as the bad side of town? Oh, we know that he's supposed to be out of Bethlehem. So you send him, he comes out of Nazareth, that's how he's going to be known, but he has to be born in a particular area, this Bethlehem area. God, in the strangeness, now has to move in the heart of kings. He has to move in the heart of emperors. He has to move in the heart of Caesar Augustus, the emperor, to say there's coming a tax and I need to know how many people are here. And so I got to move in his heart so that I have this nearly ready to have a baby, little virgin woman with her amazingly wide-eyed, anxious husband, you know, on donkey and travel to Bethlehem. I mean, you think about it. God has to change the course of time at that particular time and move into the secular world just to bring about this very strange prophecy and to ultimately fulfill it. And then after he's born, think about the people that come. Think about the proclamation. Okay, if we're going to proclaim that the king is here, we're going to have a bunch of angels do it probably, like Jesus or like God did, but it's going to be to royalty. It's going to be to an amazing, influential group of people. And that's not what happens. The strangeness of this baby's birth continues where the proclamation done by the angels out on the field to shepherds. Now, I'm not hoping to not offend anybody here tonight that if you've raised sheep and ever considered yourself to be a shepherd, that this particular time, this is the lowest part of the caste system as there is. It would be amazing for us to think about it. I mean, it would be like literally God saying, I'm going to choose to announce the birth of my son to all of those migrant caravan that's currently trying to get into the United States down around the borders right now. That's the people that I'm going to announce this to. You and I would say, wait a minute. There's a lot better people that you could announce this to. That's a rabble-rouser. Those are people that you shouldn't be doing this to. It'd be like a thing in our time. Those are the people that I'm going to announce it to. And God says, that's who I'm going to announce it to, the lowliest of low. The shepherds in a field, not kings and royalty. But then it gets worse. It gets worse. Who's going to welcome this new baby? Jesus Christ, now born, the Son of God. It gets really bad when you consider who his first visitors are, who the first people that are going to fall down and literally worship before God. It's going to be the Magi. We looked at this in Sunday school this morning and a little bit in my morning message. But the Magi is used in Matthew, and it's used in the New Testament and even in the Old Testament simply to mean wise men. Where it comes out that they're kings, we're not quite sure. More than likely, it's tradition, but the scriptures don't call them kings. There's some extrapolation you can do by going back to the Old Testament and saying that they may have been kings, but there's no evidence of it. It was probably the church up to the point of the Reformation that kind of tells us that they were kings, but there's really no evidence of it. But they are called magi. They're called wise men. It's interesting what they were wise about. We think that they're wise because they studied the scriptures. We have a tendency to believe these were the theologians of the day. These were the upright people. No, they were wise because they were pagan, Persian, witchcraft, demon understanding, astrology worshiping diviners is what they were. That's who the Magi were. That's how they knew about it. God used an amazing and summoned the powers of something which he had commanded not to do, Israel. Don't be a part of divination. Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego, Daniel, all of these people were called to be brilliant people. They were called to be wise men. That's why they were put where they were, because they were able to see things. They were able to tell the future. That's what wise men did. But they did it through ungodly ways. That was the Magi. That's who God calls as the first worshipers for him. It amazes me that God would actually do those people. These are the ones that I'm going to call to be the first worshipers of my son. It would be like today to be able to say, if you really want to know, and I'm going to reveal where my son is going to be born, I'm going to use tarot cards. I'm going to use crystal balls. I'm going to go to Ocean City, New Jersey. And you know where, if you've been there, you know what I'm talking about. The tarot card reader that's right there on the very corner of the boardwalk. That's who I'm going to use to reveal where my son is born. And that's the person that I'm going to call to go worship, first and foremost, my son. What an amazing picture. Doesn't that make you squirm? I mean, if you begin to think about it and truly understand it, it needs to make us squirm. Until we understand the missional perspective of the Christmas story. The missional idea, to be able to say that he isn't simply the king of Israel. He's not simply the king of the Jews, but he's the king of all nations. He's the king of everyone. He has promised that he is going to call a people from every tongue and every tribe and every nation someday. That's what this we see within the scriptures. It wasn't the upright. It wasn't the righteous people that God calls to be the first worshipers of God. It's the pagans of this world, of which you are and I am. That's who God called to be worshipers of him. And then I continued to further think about this in the unspeakable horror of Christmas. We don't often think about this. There's an unspeakable horror going on here. Because the Magi unwittingly tip off King Herod, a man who is amazingly paranoid, amazingly wicked, amazingly self-centered, and realize now there's a threat to the throne. Where is he that is born the king of the Jews that we may go worship him, king? Oh, what do you mean? Oh, wait a minute. We have that out in our scrolls somewhere, don't we? You mean this guy may have been born? It's amazing the wickedness that now creeps in. Because what's Herod do? Find him. Find him. I want him killed. He's the sword-wielding Herod of the scriptures. Amazing horror is stepping in at this particular point. Massacre occurs in Bethlehem just after baby Jesus leaves. Every child, every male child under the age of 2 is massacred at that particular point. Does that sound like the cutesy little Christmases that we understand and we each year find ourselves wrapped around? This is the first Christmas. This is what we see in that first, that God is using an amazing, horrific thing to bring about his redemptive purposes. The little child, Jesus Christ, survived the massacre. The rest of the children didn't. It's an amazing story. Jesus Christ is spared. The child of Bethlehem was spared and given his life so that later he may die an even more horrific death. It's spared so that he may provide redemption for every one of the Bethlehem boys that were killed at that particular time. And every grieving parent who accepts him as personal savior, it was hope for them. That's why Jesus Christ was spared. You begin to see this crazy story that unfolds at Christmas time, and yet we miss it. What I want us to see in this is there's a pattern. There's a pattern of the Old Testament. There's a pattern of the New Testament. There's a pattern within the Christmas story itself. It tells us the secrets of this, that God's wisdom is well beyond our wisdom. God uses amazing things to bring about his redemptive story. For consider your calling. This is what we studied in 1 Corinthians here at the church. 1 Corinthians 1. For consider your calling, brothers. Not many of you were wise according to worldly standards. Not many were powerful. Not many were of noble birth. But God chose what is foolish in the world to shame the wise. God chose what is weak in the world to shame the strong. God chose what is low and despised in the world, even things that are not, to bring to things that are, so that no human being may boast in the presence of God. Nothing about the Christmas story is expected. Nothing was expected about it. God chose to do it his way. He used foolish things. He used his anxious moments. He used awe-inspiring moments. He used thrilling moments. He used terrifying tragedy within that, all to bring about the redemptive hope that you and I have. There's great joy in the strange days. There is amazingly great joy in the strange days of Christmas time, the first Christmas. But it's all seen in retrospect. It's all seen in retrospect. I mean, you think about it. Did anybody want to go through all of that stuff if they'd known it ahead of time? God didn't say, this is the way it's going to occur. This is the tragedy. This is the anxious. This is the anxiety that you're going to go through. It only made sense in retrospect. That's where you and I live. We live in those particular moments. We live in those moments of anxiousness of our own lives, don't we? We live in those times of thrill, awe-inspiring times, and don't understand what God's doing. Tragedy steps into our lives continually, and we don't sit to see it. We don't get to understand it until it's times of retrospect. We may feel psychologically and emotionally destabilized, if you will, and on the very edge of things and times of our lives. And we don't understand. We don't understand what God's doing. But it's Christmas. It's this Christmas story that is the amazing, wonderful gift for each of us to be able to say that God of the unexpected, God of all the unexpectedness, wants to choose an unexpected little baby to come as the Messiah and King. He wants to choose an unknown town for him to be born in, a nondescript town. He wants to use some people that we wouldn't expect to hear the glorious news first. He wants to use pagans of this world to be the first worshipers. He wants to use the amazing tragedy of a self-centered king to kill little baby boys. He wants to use all of that to show you and I that it is all in perspective, that there is a hope that we have based upon the entire story, that this little baby Jesus, who is protected in the way he comes, grows up and 33 years later dies upon a cross for you and I. That's the wisdom of God. And so when you and I step back and we look at the things of life come June, July, August of this year, think back to the Christmas story. And think back to all of these things, the unexpectedness that God has brought into our lives, and to say, God's wisdom is so far, so indescribable, so inscrutable ways, I can't understand what he's doing. And in retrospect, someday, as I stand in glory, I will see that this is all for his glory and all for my good. And so this Christmas season, we may be facing certain of these issues right now. Some of us may be facing the very things that I've talked about. But understand this, as we begin to experience these things, understand God does see the big picture. And like the angel Gabriel says, I bring to you good news of great joy. My encouragement to us this year, submit to the kingship of Jesus in your lives.